Welcome to Tapeworm Transmissions. Your host, Nolan Sinnott. Today's guest is Andrew Moore of Watch City and More. Welcome to Tapeworm Transmissions.
Is not that the more frequently that I'm putting stuff out, I know that everyone's not checking for every song,
right?
You know, some people are, but
yeah, so there's some people that do listen to every single one, and then like I said, there's just like a mix of them as well.
Yeah,
you know, it just kind of depends.
Yeah, I think it just, for me, my listening habits typically depend on my schedule and, like, if listening to a long form, anything fits into the day, you know?
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree with you on that. I've been listening to Your Mom's House. I don't know if you're familiar with that. It's a podcast.
I haven't heard about it.
With Tom Segura and his wife, Christina Pajitsky.
Okay.
And it's really fucking funny.
Nice.
It's super funny.
Nice. What's it called?
Your Mom's House.
For sure.
Yeah. It's really good. But yeah, we're going.
I figured.
Yeah. We can cut out that beginning stuff there.
Hey, it's cool. Keep it. Whatever you want to do. You want to take the shot?
Yeah, sure. Let's start off the show right with a traditional Jameson whiskey shot here.
To a good episode here.
Yeah, to a good episode. Thanks for coming out again.
Thanks for having me again.
Definitely
crack the water. Nothing like a nice water chaser.
Hell yeah. Fresh. So it's been about like 6 months. October was like the last time that you were here.
Really? Okay. And I was wondering what the timeline was.
And I remember specifically because you had brought beers that time, and I was doing Sober October. And so I didn't drink any of the beers.
Yep. I should have brought beers this time, man.
That's okay.
My bad.
No worries. It's Monday. Yeah. I don't know if you work tomorrow.
I do work tomorrow. I was actually off today, though. I worked on the weekend, so I had a Monday off.
Nice. That's what's up.
Yep.
Fucking shit. Well, I appreciate you coming out again. You hit me up. You were like, yo, let's do another one. And I was like, yeah, let's do it.
Hell yeah.
So, like, shoot a date at me. And today just worked out.
For
and
sure.
You had a drum class earlier today.
Yeah. I'm teaching drums again. And I have a new student that started today that's 5 years old.
Oh, shit.
Yeah. It's actually two friends of mine, one from elementary school and one from like middle school, high school. They ended up meeting later in life and getting married. And it's one of their kids.
Their offspring.
Teaching
out.
Yeah. Yeah.
Super awesome.
Uh-huh.
Did they have like a little, like a smaller kit?
He came to my place and I'm playing on the Roland
the
TD9
drum
pad?
Electronic
kit.
Nice.
Yeah.
Okay, cool.
Yep, so nice and manageable volume wise.
Yeah, definitely.
To do it in the house, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, don't have a kid just like get
right.
It's
yeah,
like hitting
exactly.
It as hard as they can.
Yep.
Which, you know, you got to get that out of your system.
For a first lesson in a 5 year old, he's pretty good. He's able to keep the time in.
Nice.
He was able to freestyle a little bit, play, keep a rhythm while playing all the drums. So
hell yeah.
Yeah.
That's super awesome. I don't think I played a drum kit until like, maybe, you know, I'm probably like hit one every now and then, mm-hmm. like somewhere, but I don't think I really played a drum kit until like maybe sophomore year of high school.
Yeah. I didn't play one until I got a kit. And when that was, I think I was 11 or 12. But I was, before that, I wanted to play the drums, so I would, like, set up, I would get, like, chopsticks or whatever,
yeah.
Like, from when we'd go out to eat, and then I would come home and bring those and get, like, pots and pans and play on those.
Hell yeah.
Like, make little makeshift drum kits. My dad's a painter, so I would take his paint buckets, and those would usually be, like, the toms or, like, the little rims, like the lids of the paint bucket, was always the hi-hat. So I had little, you know, utilized all the everything that was there and made little miniature drum kits.
That's super awesome. I like that a lot.
Yeah, it was fun. Thinking back on that, it's like, oh, wow, I was playing before I even really considered that I was playing, you know?
Yeah. I think for me, it was like a moment in, like, later on in life that I decided to, like, play music. I was in, I think, like, seventh grade, and my brother had, like, played music or tried to, like, play guitar, and he, like, my parents got him, like, a smaller acoustic guitar, and he's like, oh, I don't want to play that. Like, I want to play, like, electric guitar.
Yeah.
And they're like, well, you got to start with that, you know, and then we'll spend the money to get, like, something else if you, like, actually want to do it more. And then, like, he never did it. And then he wanted to play the bass, and it's harder to get, like, an acoustic bass, especially, like, 15 years ago, you know. I feel like maybe now it might be a little bit easier, but even then it's still kind of, like, hard to hear an acoustic bass. And so they got him, like, an electric bass, and same thing, he never, like, played it. So there was these instruments just, like, laying around. Like, I never thought to, like, play it until, like, one day I was like, you know, I'm just going to, like, pick it up and, like, start to, like, learn how to do that.
Yeah.
And then and that was, like, what started it.
Sweet. Yeah, I always had guitars around the house. My dad played acoustic guitar.
Okay. So
that was always accessible, and I would pick it up and play. But I never got very, like, proficient on the guitar. It was always hard. My fingers aren't very long, so, like, playing, especially as a kid, like, trying to play on the adult-sized fretboards was difficult. Drums was easier. Just hold some sticks that are not too, you don't gotta have too large of a claw for that one. But yeah, but there was always music around, and that's because my dad played guitar. So it was
accessible. I don't think I've ever seen you play guitar before.
Yeah, I mean, I don't really play. That's why. But, like, if a guitar's around, I'll pick it up and, like, mess around. I got, like, one little sequence that I wrote, like, 15, 20 years ago that I could play pretty sloppily. And that's, like, about it, you know? So, yeah, but my dad would, like, play Led Zeppelin songs all the time. And, like, we started jamming when I started playing the drums, and we would play, like, I don't know, like, Sabbath,
Hell
Zeppelin.
Yeah.
We would play even some, like, Chili Peppers and Tool, like, Sober. So, yeah, that was cool. So it was always there was always, like, ability to play an instrument around for me, you know?
Nice.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Hell yeah. Fucking, so what you got going on now? What's on the plate for more Watch City?
I just put a live album out. So we had myself and the band that I play with, we just go out as Moore and Friends, and then Watch City, who you know, but whoever doesn't, is a crew that I'm in. We're hip-hop crew from Elgin. We had a show at House of Blues in January of 2020, and we just put the album out for that. So I've been, like, getting all the video edits done, just to have, like, visual content to pair with that. And I've been on a goal to put out a single, or maybe not a single, but just, like, some piece of music every week lately. So either a single or an EP or whatever. Like, it was the live album this week. I'm not going to get one out this Friday. But, yeah, I've just been trying to, like, put stuff out as much as I can. I don't want to talk too much about a show that I'm trying to plan because I haven't locked anything in yet. But
yeah,
trying to do get an outdoor show in the works for the summer to do in Elgin.
Nice.
So hopefully that pans out and we could have some fun event going on in the summer for everybody. But yeah, I'm just creating, like, trying to stay active, trying to collaborate more often, and, like, I just get back to the communal aspect of, like, creation, you know?
Yeah. Waterfall King, Andrew Moore collab.
Hell yeah.
That'd be super sick.
Yeah, definitely.
Maybe have you do, like, some drums on it.
Yeah. For sure.
Super Doom drums, that'd be sick.
And, like, tapeworm, you know.
Yeah,
I'd love to do some stuff on that too.
Yeah, I got to do more with tapeworm. I haven't like been on that realm of things like so much. I've just been focusing on like the album and kind of that's pretty much it.
You know? But that's good to have a focus when you're like in album mode like that, you know.
Yeah. So once that's done, once we get, like, the finalized version of it back, you know, that's just going to be, like, it's already a big weight off of our shoulders. It's just, like, 98% there, you know? So we're pretty close.
Yeah.
And then we get to do all the fun stuff with, like, videos and, you know, the teasers and everything like that and how we're going to release it, and kind of talked about that a little bit on a podcast here, the last podcast.
Nice. Sweet. Yeah, that could be fun to like embrace the marketing aspect of it too, as to be creative, you know, like,
yeah,
you know, you got to get people to look at it somehow. We're independent artists, so it's like you don't have some publicist or like PR team that's doing it for you, and with how much content there is out there, you got to find ways to do like cool shit that people actually want to look at and engage with. So
yeah,
it's like you could look at it like, oh, this sucks, I have to come up with ways to get people to see it. Or you could be like, all right, cool, here's another fun way to be creative with everything we're doing. Yeah,
I'm honestly excited about it because we got a lot of stuff like that. I don't know how it's going to pan out in the end. It may totally suck at the end. That's to be seen yet. But, you know, we want to do a lot of like video stuff, and Morian's pretty good with the video, and then my brother does video work too.
Nice.
So I think with them combined, you know, we can come up with something pretty cool.
Hell yeah.
That I think will accompany the release of the album pretty well.
Yep, and video is big, you know.
Yeah. 'Cause
everything's in like video form now.
Right.
Whether it's a short 5-second video or a full music video or whatever, a full length film, whatever, but video is like all over the place, so having a lot of video content is
right
always a plus for bands and artists, I think.
And then we'll do, you know, the photos and everything to do a regular, just like a full PR package that goes with putting that out. Try to get the demo cassettes to go out with them, maybe start a Kickstarter for the album or for like a vinyl if we want to do that.
I like that you're doing the demo cassettes. It's like a throwback to just like band, you know, what back when, before it was all, everything was streaming and download oriented.
Right.
And they would be like, oh, you get, that's like the rarity, you know, like a band would put an album out and then sometimes they would have like a deluxe edition that would come with something like that. Like a bonus disc with the demos on it, you know? So
exactly.
I think that's cool. Have that extra content like that.
Yeah, it's going to be, so the two songs we have on there right now, it'll be what's going to go on the cassette, but there's going to be some, like, bonus things in there that aren't going to be on, like, the streaming services.
Right.
So there'll just be, like, a couple little Easter eggs put into the actual music of the demos that we put on the cassette.
For sure.
And that'll only be on that.
Nice, yeah, that's, like, the House of Blues show. I mean, I did this for legal reasons, but the Bandcamp version has extra songs too, but that's just because we had like guest performers come out.
Oh, gotcha.
And I don't know about the rights to those songs. I didn't want to distribute those songs on iTunes and all that without having like written consent from
better safe than sorry.
Co-writer. So I'm like, I talked to all the people about Bandcamp, and but yeah, one of the guests was GLC, who was on Kanye West's first two albums, and he came out and
that's
did
awesome.
The two songs from those albums. So it's like, those are Kanye West beats. I'm like, no way I could get away with trying to put a live version of a Kanye West song out there. So
right on Spotify or something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, that would be hard. But that's super dope that you got that guy to come out. That's super awesome.
Yeah, man. He's a really cool dude. He's like, we Watch City went on a short tour run with GLC and Mike One in Risky Business. Mike One passed away a couple years ago, unfortunately. Rest in peace to him. But so that's how we met GLC. Actually, it was before that tour that we had booked him to come to the Ghost House in Elgin. So that's how the relationship actually started. And then, yeah, we just, like, played a few shows together in a row. We were on the road together. So we were, you know, staying at the same places.
And just getting to know each other, you know, just being you know, in the vicinity and talking and whatnot.
So that was real cool to, like, that was the first time for us to really get in with people that were, like, had success in the industry on a major level, you know. So it was, like, kind of, for one, I guess, validating to us what we were doing, and then two, it was also a motivation to feel like, damn, look how close we are to, like, Grammy Award winners, you know. Like, we're on the same bills, we're in the same vehicles here, traveling around, you know. So, yeah. And then it's just that it's, you know, we have a nice, friendly, casual relationship, so I just, like, hit him up. Asked him if he wanted to do it because I thought it would be just a really cool thing to do, you know?
Hell yeah.
If he was down. And he was down. I'm glad. Really glad he was down. So, yeah, big shout out to GLC. And, yeah, that was great. That was, like, a legendary moment for all of us, I think, that were on stage to be, like, performing those songs. Especially, you know, the bands. Like, we all listened to Kanye West, especially those early albums. And those are some of the standout songs that were, like, singles from the album, you know? Right. So to be on stage, and, like, Jalen, our drummer, he also goes by Observe. He's, I should connect you with him. He probably would be down to come on the podcast.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, let me know.
So he plays the drums, but he's also a producer and, like, solo artist, and he goes by Observe. But anyways, he was playing the drums for the show, and he was, you know, super hyped on being able to do that, like, play those songs that you grow up listening to, and now you're, like, the drummer for the act that, you know, so.
Yeah,
that was a great experience for all of us being up there. Same, and, I mean, I think everybody felt the same, you know, Brandon and Mike and Kaz, too. I know I did. I got to, like, there's a line leading into GLC's verse on the song Drive Slow that Kanye West does, and, like, I did that part. I'm like, that's awesome. Shit. Like, just did, like, Kanye's line,
right,
you know, in a live setting with the artist, you know. So, yeah, it was dope. It was fun to do that, and I think it was cool for everyone who was there to just be able to, like, you know, you think you're just at going to a indie. I mean, I guess he has an independent artist, but, you know, like, just going to, like, a local show, and then to have, like, Grammy winner come out and be a guest act. That was kind of the goal of it. Like, just do it, have a nice treat for everybody there. Right. Know?
Yeah. That's super badass. I didn't know that.
I'm going to get, like, 'cause there's footage of it, you know, like, we recorded not the entire show, but, like, clips of the entire show.
Sure.
So, and there's, so I need to put together an edit of that, 'cause I've been, like, so immersed trying to get all this other content done that I haven't sat down and made a video for that. I have for some of the other songs, but yeah, I just want to, like, because I think that'll be cool to show too. Just throw it up on YouTube.
You know? Yeah, hell yeah. I've seen the clips that you've put out of it when it happened, and, like, more recently too. And, like, dude, that looked like a badass show. I regret not going to that
Man,
one.
Man, it was so fun to do, and it was, like, the fact that that was, like, the first and last show of the year because COVID shut everything down.
It was, like, 2 months after that.
Yeah, for sure. And, like, we had another show booked for, you know, shortly after, but it got shut down because of it. So it was, I'm like, man, yeah, we had a good one for the only one of the year, you know?
Yeah.
But, yeah, so that was a lot of fun. Yeah, I was gonna go somewhere else. I was gonna set, but I forgot. So whatever. It's all good.
Yeah, whatever. I think a lot of people, a lot of acts. I think every musician act was super bummed about the summer of 2020.
Man, for sure. And for me, the main thing that bummed me out is that we had a festival appearance booked at a cannabis thing. Well, all right. So first of all, this thing got, I guess actually would have got canceled either way, because it ended up getting canceled because it was deemed to be unlawful. Like, even though cannabis is legal, certain aspects of it, I guess, were illegal. I think because they were planning to give away weed, and, like, they were planning to let people smoke in the building. Or maybe not in the building, but, like, outside the building. And then I guess the cops said, like, nah, it's legal, but not that legal. So,
of course. Of course that's what they would say.
So the event got shut down, but, like, and then, like, a couple, it wasn't too long after that COVID shut everything down anyway. So, but, yeah, so we had, like, another big gig lined up that we were hyped on. So that sucked that it got canceled. But outside of that, it did definitely start to suck, like, getting into the summertime. But it was also a little bit, after going so hard to promote the House of Blues show, it was kind of nice to have, like, a little break from the grind of, like, promoting shows. You
yeah, because that blows.
It's just tough, like, especially if you're, like, we got booked for the show, for the House of Blues show, but I made the flyer. I was making, and then, you know, it was a Live Nation sponsored event. It's the first time I had done anything like that. So they had, like, requirements for the dimensions. Like, I had to have this side, like, Instagram stories format, website format, ticket web for, like, all these different types of formats. Wow. So I had to just, like, reformat. I was spending a lot of time doing it. It was probably supposed to be the somebody else's job if I didn't jump up to do it, but I was just like, fuck it, let's do it. I guess enjoyed the aspect of it, but it did become a lot, like, when I started doing that, and then I was making promo videos, and I made, like, 12 different promo videos for that event, you know, and then on top of just, like, trying to push the ticket links and push the physical tickets and all that.
Right.
So it was well fucking worth it, you know. You see the videos and you see the results of, yeah, like, you know, all the bands, all the other bands involved in the show, plus everyone in, you know, Watch City and More and Friends, like, busted ass to get people in there, and it was definitely well worth it. But it was, I will say, nice at the same time to, like, have a reason, you know, because if things didn't shut down, I would have just kept going, and, like, even if, yeah, I was burning out, like, all right, fuck it, we got to keep this momentum going.
Right.
So it was like, all right, everyone's got to shut down now. Like, okay, we're not losing any, like, ground here because everyone's got to shut down. So,
yeah, it's, yeah, kind of everyone's, like, stopping at the same pace.
Yeah, yeah, so, but then it quickly dried up again, and it's like, damn, I want to be playing shows.
Yeah. Yeah, I definitely miss playing shows. We got to play a couple over that time period. We did, we did one show before, like, right before, I don't know, when was that? We played a show, I think, before, like, all the COVID stuff. I can't remember when that was, at Cairo. And then we did a live stream at Cairo. And then we played Side Street outside.
Nice.
And that was a pretty badass show. Like, just like, you know where Side Street is, right?
Yeah.
And, like, we were playing in, like, the alleyway right outside. Excuse me. Like, kind of in, like, the gravel pit, there was, like, a carpet laid out and, like, the speakers, and we were live streaming from out there. And it was really awesome just to, like, hear, like, the snare drum just, like, echoing through, like, downtown Elgin.
Yeah, dude, that's sick. That reminds me of, like, we did Elgin Fringe Festival.
Mm-hmm.
Angris had a set, and so Angris, for anyone who doesn't know, Angris is a member of Watch City Crew, another MC and producer from Elgin. And his voice, like, projects naturally even without a microphone. So when he's yelling on stage, it's always, like, resonates.
Yeah.
And we did a Elgin Fringe Festival, and that particular year the bands were playing in the parking lot of that bank that's across the street from Side Street. You know what I'm talking about?
Right.
Yeah. So they had a stage set up there, and, yeah, same thing. I remember hearing Angris's voice, like, bouncing off of the buildings. Like,
hell yeah.
Just hearing Angris go through the entire downtown Elgin, his voice, and hearing it, Watch City, from Angris's fucking loud-ass, strong voice. So, yeah, it's cool to, like, have an outdoor event in a city and get that different sound environment out of it. Yeah.
Especially, like, your hometown, too.
Hell yeah.
You know, we were just, like, a block away from, like, you know, a few blocks away from our house. So, like,
yeah,
you know, getting there wasn't even, like, a pain. You know, it's like,
that's nice. That's beautiful. Just pull up.
I think he gave us like a little bit of money, but like we didn't even want any money. We just wanted to like play the show and get people to donate to like his thing.
Uh-huh.
You know, we were just going out there. Like we set up like a whole bunch of amplifiers and stuff like that. I think we had like his whole thing connected with, because our bassist wasn't there. He was getting married like the next day, so he was out of town. So we just had like everything going. Like, yeah, it was badass.
Yeah.
And, like, people started coming by, like, they were just walking across the street. The cops came by and were just, like, flashing their lights. It was a pretty good time.
Nice. Yeah, dude, that's awesome. I love that Side Street is still keeping the live music alive. I saw that they're...
Battle of the Bands.
There's Battle of the Bands coming up, and that they're doing a release show for Billow, I believe, is the name of the band.
Mm-hmm.
That's like a 15-person capacity, like matinee show, like a daytime album release show for like super small capacity. I'm like, man, that's pretty sick. I've never even really seen something like that, like a daytime show like that. That's like a significant like a album release, you know. Not to say a show that's not an album release is less significant, but that's like a marquee show for a band, you know, to do an album release. So that's cool, like a daytime show like that.
And only 15 people in there.
Yeah, exactly.
Easy to fill, and then like you just like everyone else has got to wait. Like, yeah, sorry, you're gonna have to wait outside.
And I don't know if it's outside in 15 and it's like roped off, or if it's just like, because I think 15 is probably fine at this point in with regulations in place. So
yeah,
but yeah, I don't know. But yeah, I saw that like 15, limited to 15 people. I'm like, that's cool. It's crazy how things are like so exclusive now. Like trying to go to like a, you know, like the White Sox used to be like nobody is like $9 for a ticket, so easy to go. And now it's like an exclusive, like it's harder to get tickets, you know what I mean? Because like the capacities are so low for how many people could be in there.
Right.
So everything now is like an exclusive
it's
event.
Like a VIP thing.
Yeah,
you know?
Like anywhere you go at this point is like that pretty much.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I kind of like that. And I kind of like that for the album release, though.
Yeah.
I think that's kind of cool. But for the White Sox, not that I ever really went to go to sports games or anything.
Uh-huh.
I think it would be fun. I mean, I don't know about baseball necessarily. I went to an office party. We went to a baseball game and like we got a bunch of free food and alcohol, so that was cool.
Yeah, that's what's like baseball games are fun, like ambiance. So even if you don't like baseball, it's cool to go there and just like have a beer, eat some food, and just enjoy the space, you know.
Yeah,
I like going to arenas and like sporting venues because I feel like oftentimes they're like the best architecture within whatever city they're in. Yeah. So if I'm going to visit a place, I like to see, if I can and if it lines up, I try to like go to a game there, like a baseball or football or basketball or whatever's available, hockey, whatever, just because I always like to see the stadiums, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, I like to be at the games too, but I feel like it's just cool to see, like, you know, cities put a lot of money into those stadiums, so like, they're usually pretty nice.
Yeah, no, you're right.
Yeah.
I went to, what is it? I can't remember. It's the soccer stadium.
In Chicago?
The Chicago Fire.
Yeah, I think it used to be called...
The Toyota?
Yeah, I think it's called SeatGeek Stadium now, but yeah, it used to be Toyota Park.
So I went to a concert there, and We went to go to, not Riot Fest, what's the other one? Open Air, Chicago Open Air.
Yeah.
And it was the year that it was Tool and...
I was there too, actually.
Oh, you were there?
System of a Down?
Tool and System of a Down, right? And it was supposed to also be,
Prodigy.
Prodigy, right?
Yeah, man.
But he died.
Yeah.
So then we got the other band.
The Cult. Yeah.
And
they weren't bad. I didn't know them. I didn't know their music that well, but like at all until they announced them and I checked them out. But
they put on a good show.
Yeah, it was
the guy had
good.
A lot of tambourines.
Yeah.
So I had sent in like this thing, Festival Owl on Facebook, posted a thing that if you sign up to the concert, you get free tickets. If you just put your email in, you'll get a free ticket to the concert. And, like, I didn't believe it, but I put my email in there later, and, like, it had gone to my junk mail, and my roommate emailed me, and she's like, hey, did you get an email for the concert thing? And I'm like, no, I never got one. And I did. So I got a free ticket to the concert on the floor, but it was like the back side of the floor, not the front side of the floor.
Yeah, that's what I had tickets to, too. And I actually got mine through, like, they were selling them. That must have just been a complete, for whatever reason, like, the lineup was pretty solid, but for whatever reason, it was a complete failure from a ticket sales standpoint, because they were giving away tickets.
Yeah.
Like, I bought tickets for I don't remember if I bought them for the, I think I bought them for the Tool night. Either way, like, because they had a deal where you could buy tickets for one night and they would give you tickets for the next night for free.
Mm.
And the tickets that I bought for one night were only $25 a piece. So it was like, I think I got four tickets for $25, and then I got four additional tickets for the following day for free. So it's like you get a 2-day festival pass for $25.
Right.
And it's crazy because they were selling those same tickets for like $200.
Yeah. Yeah. Because I had friends that had got like the front parts of the thing.
Yeah.
And they spent like $200-$300 on those tickets.
Yeah.
Like when they first announced the festival.
Exactly. Yeah. When they first came out, even the ones that we got behind there, those were even selling for $100 or more. You know?
And it gets more fucked up for them at least. But for us, it was great.
Yeah.
So we had those. So the first night for System of a Down, we were all like in the first part of it. We had friends that had tickets, and their tickets, what made me bring this up was their tickets were, like, really far up, like, super, super high, like, in the bleachers.
Oh, okay, in the seats,
and, like, and I was having a panic attack up there. I was like, I feel like if the wind blows high far enough, like, I'll fucking fly off of here.
Yeah.
You know? I was like, Jesus Christ, I can't be up here. So, anyway, but my tickets weren't up there anyway, so I was like, I don't have to be up here.
Yeah, fuck it, I'm coming down.
We were just up there as, like, just to check it out, you know? And so, like, what they would do is, like, you would go in, they would scan your ticket to get in, then you would take your ticket to a booth to get a wristband
to go on the floor.
To go on the floor. And then we would give our ticket to another person, and they would go to the booth and they would get a wristband
to get on the floor.
So we got all of our friends on the floor,
with
these wristbands and then we had our friends that had the other tickets the second night for Tool. So I was like, I was like the second person from the rail.
Tool. So you got the tickets from them? You did the same thing for the front row?
Yeah, the second
ones?
Night for Tool.
Damn, dude, that's smart. Dude, these festivals, they don't figure out the hacks until later on in the game. Lollapalooza, for like up until like 2000 and maybe 11 or so, it was easy as hell to get into. I was like, I would just go. A lot of people now it's like army. Yeah, dude, it's like an army. It's like a base now, dude. It used to be you could walk up and that shit just... hop one single fence and you are in there. Now it's like crazy. It's not like that anymore. I mean, now I'm grown. I'm not trying to sneak into festivals like that. But when I was young and I was like, didn't have the money, but I was still like, oh, I still got to see whoever, you know?
Yeah. I mean, and this wasn't even like sneaking into anything. They were just like dumb. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? It's like we were just handing off our... Like, you could do that at other concerts, too, for, like, general admission.
Right.
Like, if you have someone, like, you have two friends on the floor, and that one friend gives you the ticket, and so you have two tickets, and you go up with your one friend, you give them the other ticket, then you both come down, right?
Uh-huh.
So then you can all be, like, on the floor. And that's basically what we were doing.
Right. Yeah, so that's power in numbers, man. That's
so they were just like
power in numbers.
And
scenario.
Then once we had the wristbands on, like, we were locked in.
Yeah, you don't have to worry about it anymore.
Right. We were done, you know?
Dude, that's genius.
So we were like up front for like all of that shit.
Nice.
Who was it? Ghost.
Yeah.
The Cult.
Ghost was cool. Dude, Tool was dope, but it was so short for a Tool show.
Yeah, I think
it was like
that's
a 60-minute set or something.
I think that's why it really undersold, because like
people knew, like word got out.
Like Tool is like, they want to see Tool like in a venue.
Yeah.
You know, like or an arena.
Uh-huh.
Not like a stadium.
I saw Tool at Lollapalooza one time in Grant Park. That was pretty dope.
Was that a while ago?
It was in, yeah, it was.
For 10,000 days?
Yeah.
That
must have
been
10,000 days, yeah. So it was probably around, what was that, 2010, 2011?
No, it had to be sooner, earlier than that, because I was in high school when that album came out.
Okay, yeah. So, yeah, I mean, it was sometime in that era, like, at high school, like, just post-high school. I think I had just gotten out of high school, so I was probably 19 years old, so that would have been, like, 09.
Is that the same year Rage played?
No, it was the year Beastie Boys were supposed to play, but fucking MCA got diagnosed with cancer and they like canceled everything.
Right.
Which fucking sucks. And then he passed away shortly after. So yeah, that whole situation sucks for them, like from a human standpoint. Yeah, so I honestly don't even remember who the fuck else was on the bill. I just remember being so hyped that Tool and Beastie Boys were on the bill, you know?
Yeah.
But I saw Tool. I think they were, like, scheduled as a conflict. It would have been, like, I would have had to choose between Beastie Boys and Tool.
Oh, gotcha.
Either way, it would have been like, fuck, I can't do that. But, yeah. yeah, but I saw Tool there, and that was a good show. I also saw Tool at the Sears Center. I was working as an usher, and they played there. I saw some great shows, like, got paid, like, whatever, shitty minimum wage, yeah. But to see great shows. Like, I saw Tool, saw The Who.
What?
I saw Drake when he was, like, nobody knew who the hell who he was. It was a Lil Wayne show. Lil Wayne and T-Pain and the Gym Class Heroes. That was the bill. And then, but Drake came, like Lil Wayne brought out Drake, and I don't think I even knew who he was at the time, and there was probably people who did, but
he was on that show.
Yeah, on Degrassi, like he was still fresh off of that, right? Yeah, and then shortly after he blew up, I'm like, damn, I just saw that guy like as a special guest. But dude, that show was fun because I was working, like scanning tickets to get in. So I just had my, like, a lot of my friends wanted to come. I'm like, just bring a piece of paper, and I'll just pretend like I scanned you in and just go sit down somewhere. So I was just, like, had all my friends coming in. I was acting like they had tickets. I was scanning blank pages and just letting them slide by.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
Where did they go? Was it like
I don't know. It was, yeah, well, there was a general admission area. Like, they probably, I don't know, they must have found somewhere to go. They yeah. figured it out from there. I mean, a lot of the, like, these venues, especially when it's like a large scale staff that's getting like outs, like most places outsource, like
yeah.
it was Monterey Security where yeah, I was working.
I worked for that too, but I only worked shitty concerts.
Yeah. So there was
and
like,
wrestling.
So, you know, it's like a lot of people, it's like, man, I'm not getting paid a lot. It's like nobody's truly like trying to get into a confrontation over some shit. Right. So a lot of people are just like real casual about it. So if you just don't act suspicious and walk on by, like you're probably not getting checked out. So if you just find some empty seats,
grab some nachos, grab a whole bunch of stuff in your hands.
Yeah, exactly. And if you just find some empty seats, like the only time something's going to happen is if somebody sits, like if you're sitting in someone's seats, and then it's like, oh, okay. Yeah. But if the concert's not sold out, you know, then you could find some empty seats. And
Yeah.
People used to like sneak in through the smoking sections too at the Sears Center. It's not the Sears Center anymore. Now it's the Now Arena. But,
yeah, the Now Arena. It's got a big pill bottle.
I'm like, holy shit, they just got a pill bottle on top of the fucking arena.
Yeah. We were driving down 90. You just see that big old pill bottle like spinning.
Yeah, dude, that's crazy. Imagine, like, it's so now is like supplements. So, like, if you know that, then it's not that crazy. But imagine if it was just like fucking Vicodin, like the Vicodin arena.
Yeah,
it's like a fucking script, like a fucking pill bottle spinning around.
Little blue capsules in it.
I'm honestly kind of surprised that the pharmaceutical industry hasn't got into the arena buying game yet. They probably wouldn't win like the bid for it. I don't think anyone wants to be called Vicodin Field. Actually, that sounds kind of dope. Vicodin Field.
Yeah.
The Minnesota Vikings at Vicodin Field.
So it'd be a Minnesota thing. They'd be the first ones.
What is it? I think it is in Walk Hard. The one guy is just like, he's like, if you're wrecked for more than 4 hours, call more ladies.
Yeah. Dude, I love that movie, man. Fucking
John C. Reilly.
I'm trying to think of that dude's name who says that.
Oh, yeah.
The same guy who's always like, man, you never once paid for drugs.
Like, you never once paid for drugs. Not once.
Yeah, dude, that's a great movie. That's like I feel like it's a little bit underrated.
Yeah. I feel like, you know, Spinal Tap?
I've never seen that movie. Oh, okay. I need to see that movie because I love, like, you know, just that. For one, I usually love music-based movies, and then comedies, and then just the idea of, like, the whole mockumentary thing. You know? Yeah. So, it's right up my alley from what it sounds like. I should watch it.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely some, like, older British humor, but it's classic. It's yeah. pretty good. And there's a lot of, like, tropes and things that are played on in, like, a lot of pop culture references. Uh-huh. Like, the amp goes to 11.
Nice.
I don't know if you ever heard that from yeah. before, but that's from, like, from Spinal Tap.
Yeah, see, I know that had to come from somewhere, right? So that's where it is. That's cool. Yeah, I need to check that out. So
it's pretty good. But Walk Hard is like a masterpiece.
Yeah,
though.
For sure. I love
that's
that
just
shit.
Like
I've been halved.
Yeah, it's so good. Yeah, I've watched that movie so many times.
I don't know where it is, but I had it on DVD. I haven't been able to find the DVD, but I watched it. It was on. I think it was on Netflix.
Yeah, it was on Netflix. I don't know if it still is.
Yeah, now, I watched it recently, like not too recently, but maybe a few months ago.
Yeah,
Tenacious D and The Pick of Destiny just came back on Netflix too. That's Ooh. Another DVD that I had. I kind of like did a trade type thing. It was like I let a friend borrow Tenacious D. He let me borrow some cassette tapes, and then we kind of just like mutually agreed, like keep the DVD. Keep the cassettes. Yeah. Yeah. So I hadn't seen it, but that's like one of my favorite movies, man. And
that movie is pretty great.
And it came, and now that it's on Netflix, I finally watched it again, and it was great. I've been like going back to movies that I loved. I watched Dude, Where's My Car last
Dude,
night.
Dude, I just watched that. You watched that last night?
Yeah.
That I haven't seen that movie like in so long, and we, me and Sylvia just watched that movie.
Yeah, I watched it with Sonia too. My wife, yeah, she actually picked it out. I was like, went outside, like cheaped real quick. It was like, came back in after smoking, and she's like, "How's this?" I'm like, "Perfect, perfect." After that, yeah.
So. What does it say? What are their tattoos again?
Dude and sweet.
Sweet. Like, oh, what does my tattoo say? Yeah. Dude. Yeah. What does my tattoo say? Sweet. No, but what does my tattoo say?
Yeah, dude. That's like fucking so many lines in that I like forgot that I'm like, oh, that's where I like. You ever see a movie and you're like, you've been saying something for years and you're like, forgot like where it even came from, like
yeah.
there was one of those I can't even remember what, but I'm like, oh dude, that's like something I got from this movie when I was a teenager probably.
That whole movie is fucking gold.
Oh man, it's not the continuum transfunctioner.
who's that lady that's in it? She's in like a lot of stuff now.
The
nerdy one. Like with them.
That's one of the girlfriends.
Yeah.
I don't even know what her name is.
Whatever. I just saw. I just started watching Galaxy Quest. I don't know if you remember that movie or seen that.
Is that like the Stormtroopers parody type movie?
No, it's it's like Star Trek.
Oh, okay.
Like Star Trek, they're all actors like on a Star Trek like show. And then these actual like aliens come down and like bring them to their ship, and like everything that their alien life is based off of their television show.
Uh-huh.
And it's with like Tim Allen and Alan Rickman.
Oh, okay, I know what you're talking about. Yeah.
It's on YouTube. It's for free, actually.
Really?
Yeah, YouTube has a couple movies
awesome.
On there for free.
Nice. I didn't know that. I knew you could like rent movies on YouTube.
Yeah, there's some you can rent or you have to buy. But they have ones where you can, like, play for free with ads.
Uh-huh.
And Galaxy Quest is one of them.
Nice.
Or at least it is for now.
Nice. Yeah, man, that's just some of those, like, old comedy movies. There's not really... I feel like that's not there anymore. There's not that many, like... There used to be a lot of, like, really funny, like... off the wall comedy films, and now everything's a little like, not everything, there's some that come out, but yeah, like Superbad was one that was like older at this point, and The Hangover like older at this point still. I feel like all the Adam Sandler movies and like the Will Ferrell movies and like that stupid brand of comedy that's still like, it's hilarious. Yeah. To me is kind of gone now. It's like they don't really make those like as big Hollywood movies anymore.
No, I feel like I don't know. I feel like almost all movies are not like big Hollywood movies.
Yeah.
Like without like the big sets and everything, it's so like digitized now.
Yeah.
I just feel like it. I don't know. I just feel like it, there's definitely so much feeling taken away from movies. I mean,
yeah.
Some of the movies are really good. Like I do enjoy some of these later Marvel movies.
Uh huh.
Like I don't know if you've seen like the Endgame or.
I did see that. I'm usually not into like superhero movies, so I don't really check for them that often. But I did see Endgame.
Yeah, me neither. But I thought that one was like pretty badass and pretty well put together. Yeah, that was cool.
Anytime, like I thought Joker was really good. I'm always looking out for the Batman ones. Anytime a Batman related one comes out, I like those, and I always look out for those. But
I didn't see the new Justice League.
Oh, I didn't. Is that out already?
Yeah, that's out. Yeah.
Okay.
I haven't seen that, or like, I don't even.
Well,
know.
I mean, I know one came out not too, but isn't there a new one coming out, or did it just come out?
Yeah, there's like, so the original movie, I guess, was directed by someone, and then he had to like stop halfway through and wasn't able to finish the movie, so someone else finished the movie, and then he was able to like re-edit the movie. How he would have done it.
So it's
like,
I didn't see that one.
So that's like the new one that's out.
The one that's coming that just came out.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I haven't seen any of the Justice because one came out a few years ago too.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Definitely. Yeah. Definitely.
I didn't see that one.
I didn't see that either.
Yeah. But Batman vs Superman was pretty cool. A lot of people shitted on that when it came out, but I went to see it and I thought it was good.
I don't think I saw that one either.
It was, I mean, it wasn't like remarkable to the point where I could even really recall too much of it. I only saw it once, but I remember enjoying it when I watched it, you know.
I did really like the Joker, though.
Joker was great. I thought that was great.
That was really well done, just because it was such a different, you know, it's not really like it's superhero-y, but, you know, it's about the villain, but he kind of makes him not really the villain in some ways.
Yeah, it was like strange to see a film where you almost like empathize with like the psychopath.
Yeah,
you know
like
what I mean.
You kind of see like the things kind of pulling together to where someone would be like that.
Where
and you're like, oh shit,
like that. Yeah.
You know, like yeah, that was a pretty fucking crazy movie.
That's why I like where the Batman movies have gone ever since. Like it kind of started with what I know, the one right before Dark Knight. I think it was Batman Begins.
Okay, yeah.
And then that was the same director as Dark Knight and Dark Knight Rises. So like once that, I don't remember a dude's name anymore.
Heath Ledger?
No. Christopher Nolan? Directed those films, the Dark Knight films.
Was it Christopher Nolan?
That was the Batman. He was Batman. No, wait. Was he Batman in those? I don't know, dude.
No,
I'm
Christian
terrible.
Bale was
Christian
Batman.
Bale. I'm terrible with, like, names and all that
that's
shit.
That's okay.
But,
me too.
But anyways, that's, like, when I started getting interested in it. Like, Batman Begins, Dark Knight. And the reason is I think Batman is the one that does the best job. I guess Spider-Man does too, but that doesn't interest me as much. But of, like, personifying like the characters, making them more believable characters than like making them fit into something that you could believe in, like a society, as opposed to just like pure fiction, you know
what
I mean?
Yeah,
and that's why I'm able to like I guess buy into the storylines a little bit more. Where when I see even the Avengers movies that are like done really well, I just have trouble buying into the storylines because I guess I just fantasy is a tough genre. It's a tough sell for me because it's like, I guess I just don't buy into the characters that well because I don't, it's easy to find things to relate to because that's what they're meant for. Like it's movies. They're supposed to be relatable characters.
Yeah.
But I guess have an easier time like connecting to like, oh, that's a real life like scenario there, you know?
Sure.
Yeah.
They did just come out with WandaVision.
I've heard a lot of people say, like, oh, the first few episodes are kind of iffy, but then it's great. But I haven't watched it.
I was kind of like, I wasn't planning on watching it. And then one day I was like, oh, I had nothing else to do. And I just, like, put it on. And I had, like, no idea what to expect. Like, I was kind of, like, downplaying it in my head because so many people had, like, hyped it up, you know?
and I was like blown away by it.
Yeah,
it's pretty wild.
Maybe I should check it out. Yeah, I'm always like hesitant to check out any of the superhero stuff because I'm just like, I don't know if I'm gonna like it, but maybe I should check that one out.
It's pretty interesting. It kind of like plays on from like where the Endgame like had left off with.
Okay.
With those characters.
Uh huh.
It's pretty interesting though. Like it's pretty interesting how they like did it, how they put it together. You know, it's not like a normal like superhero thing. And
That's okay. You said Christopher Nolan, right?
Yeah.
That was the name you said. That probably is the name of the director, right? That name sounds so familiar. Because I'm trying to think, like, is that another actor? I think that is the person who made those three films.
Because Christian Bale is the...
he was the Batman.
Hello.
Yeah. You know what else is actually pretty good? Is the fucking Lego Batman. That was funny.
Oh, yeah.
You ever seen that?
Yeah, that's Will Arnett.
Oh, that really?
The voice of him, yeah.
Dude, those Lego movies are pretty funny, actually.
Yeah, he did The Dark Knight.
Okay.
And The Dark Knight Rises and Batman Begins.
Yeah, so that's when I felt like Batman started getting, like, it took a dark turn, and it took, like, a realistic turn, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, when, I think that Heath Ledger movie really, like... When I think with him dying too, he played the Joker in The Dark Knight.
Him dying
like before it came out too.
Yeah, like I think even probably before it was done filming.
Yeah, I think it was before it was done filming. Yeah. But I think most of his parts were like had already been done maybe.
Yeah, I think they did definitely have to do some parts without him being alive though, and like still figure out a way to finish out the movies. Yeah, yeah.
They did it somehow because that's a good movie, and he's such an incredible actor. Like.
Yeah, and that's a sad situation that he, like, pretty much, I mean, I'm sure there were other things going on in addition to it, but seems like he kind of died from the role, like, from going so hard at the role, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, I think so, too.
People, like, die for greatness, you know?
Right.
But it sucks because then it's like, well, damn, now you're dead, and now you're gone, and now you, like, but, yeah, I mean... Who knows? Sad situation. But yeah. He definitely, like, did an amazing job in that role.
Yeah. I think Philip Seymour Hoffman is kind of like that, too. He's,
I'm sure that's, like, another face one I'd have to see.
Yeah. Someone else that goes really hard, Jim Carrey.
Dude, Jim Carrey is, a great actor for sure.
He really, like, you know, he probably on the same level, like, with Heath Ledger. He really puts himself into, like, those roles, you know? And it kind of, like, it's got to be really scary to go through that, like, in your head, you know?
Man, and it's just, like, living in that reality.
Right.
That's, like, you know, like, think of, like, the fucked up things that go through a character like the Joker goes through, and like that if you want to do that role and you want to like take that route, that method, I guess I'm not sure if that's what he did, method acting or what. I'm not really familiar with all the terminology of acting and shit, but to try to embody a role where all this fucked up shit has happened to somebody,
right,
has got to put your mind in a fucked up place too, you know?
Yeah.
And then to have to live in that place for however long the filming takes, like, it's like purposely putting yourself in a fucked up place. It's like when actors like lose a shitload of weight for a role or something, you know? It's like people do for art and for money. I think in most cases when people go hardcore like that, it's for because they love the art form, you know, and they're willing to do it.
Right.
But I'm sure the money helps if you're getting paid a lot for a big role. Like, oh, yeah, fuck it, I'll do whatever. But, yeah, man, people go through a lot. Like, I have been thinking about this, how much physical sacrifice comes with, like, greatness in anything. Even just, like, oh, you want to be a great beat maker? Well, you're going to probably have sore-ass shoulders from, like, sitting at the fucking computer all day. You know what I mean? Like, there's physical tolls that come with, like, getting great at anything. You play guitar, you get like
gonna get arthritis.
Yeah, carpal tunnel, whatever. Tunnel. Yeah, same with playing drums, had calloused ass fingers, and you know, so you play basketball or sports, fuck up your knees or whatever. So there's always a physical toll along with all the other tolls that come with, like, really trying to be great at something.
Yeah, really anything.
Yeah.
So you gotta just do it. Yeah. And that takes energy and force, and that force energy comes out of your body.
Yeah, exactly. Dude. So I've been, like, trying to kind of exploring the idea here in my head lately of just, like, cyclical living of, like, all right, let's go, like, what if you go hard at, I mean, you probably lose momentum, and momentum is a thing that propels things forward, so maybe it's not a great strategy from, like trying to start a business or monetize things standpoint, but I'm just thinking more from a holistic, like, well-being standpoint.
Yeah.
To just, like, cycle your passions around a little bit, like, all right, if you're going so hard at any particular thing that, like, it's starting to greatly affect your body, like, all right, maybe slow down on that, go hard, explore another passion and go hard at that for a while, and then if that starts to give you any type of ailments, then maybe you go back to the other thing. But I don't know, I think that's just an idea, like a little train of thought I've kind of been on, like, I don't know, would that work or would that just be a hindrance to, like, growth altogether? But
I don't know, I feel like, to be honest, I feel like that's honestly where I've been with a lot of things too. I mean, just with, like, the Waterfall King, like, I play the drums, so that's already, like, taking me away from, like, the guitar.
Yeah.
So trying to find my way back into doing the guitar, and then I've been making guitar pedals actually, so I've been doing, like, some electronic stuff.
I saw a post you made.
Yeah, and now I've been, like, trying to work on, like, some guitar repairs and maybe get enough tools together and supplies to build a guitar from, like, mostly scratch, you know, and see how that comes along. And you know, I don't know, it all, like, ties together, I feel like, you know, if like, you know, we're both pretty independent artists, so, like, if you're doing, like, a lot of video work, you know, that's only going to help benefit you later in the long run when you have to do it again. You kind of have already, like, stored that, like, practice, you know, now you go.
Or when there's, like, an opportunity that comes, like, they need someone who knows how to edit video, you know?
Yeah.
There's so many things like that, too, that I've run into that I don't even really, like, you don't know what you're preparing yourself for a lot of the time. You know, you're just, like, doing things because whatever reason, either because you just feel like it or, you know, like, in my case, making videos and working on album art and stuff like that. I started doing that just for myself and for Watch City, you know, like, just so that we could have content and not have to, you know, outsource everything. So, but then I learned the skill, and then it turned into, like, without, you know, it's crazy. Like, I know that I'm on a good track because there's just occasions where, like, I'm not advertising a service or anything, but people will have asked me to do album art or do, like, work on a video or,
hell yeah,
things that I'm not out there, like, pushing, like, hey, I do videos or this or whatever.
Right.
But just off of the fact that, like, I've done it for myself and for friends for so long that it's, like, then you start to get these opportunities that you didn't even know you were, like, preparing yourself,
Right.
But then they come and it's like, oh, yeah, sure, I could do that because I know how and why not, you know?
Right.
Or maybe you just, like, see somebody, like, there's been times where I see a post, so I'm like, I need someone to edit video or, like, whatever, and it's like, oh, I have that skill now, like, I know how to do that, so, and I know how to do it at a high level, so it's like, over years of doing stuff over and over and over again for yourself, you then get good enough that maybe people want to pay you to do it too, so it's like,
right,
yeah, it's crazy.
You're not wrong with that, definitely. Yeah. I've definitely had strange opportunities come up that I never would have thought would have came up.
And if you're not ready for them, then you miss them, you know? So
exactly.
That's just learning as many skills as you can.
Yeah, yeah, definitely.
Is a benefit.
Yeah, I got called to do, like, a musical for a high school.
Really?
Yeah.
That's awesome.
So
when did that happen?
This was a couple of years ago, maybe like 2016-ish. I someone had hit me up saying, like, hey, you play guitar. Do you want to do, like, this musical for Streamwood High School? They need a guitar player to do Dr. Seussical the Musical.
Nice.
So I did the Seussical the Musical, and, like, you know, it was like a... There was still a lot to learn for me, like, on the aspect of it, like, not having really played with, like, a pit orchestra, like, band like that before.
That's awesome.
But just, like, having, you know, had prepared myself to, like, get in to do that situation, you know?
Yeah.
So that was, like, that was just, like, one of the weird things. Uh-huh. And that propelled me to do, like, two more musicals after that.
Right, and then once you do something, for one, it opens your eyes to the possibility.
Yeah.
But then, two, it's just like, all right, now you have a connection. You have something that you could put on your resume.
Right.
I took a music business class, and that was one of the things that was taught is, like, if you do it once, then you could put it on your resume. You know, like, and then if you get hired, then you better make sure that you know how to do whatever you got to do to get the job done. You know what I mean?
Right.
But to just be able to have something on your resume, like, oh yeah, I've done this before, I've done a musical before, then yeah. It's like, now you're legit. Now you're like ready for the next gig and the next gig, you know?
Yeah, and I did three of them. I did Seussical, the Dr. Seuss one, Little Shop of Horrors. Those were both at Streamwood High School.
Okay.
And then I did Through the Looking Glass, which is Alice in Wonderland, like the second part to it. And that was at ECC.
Nice. Damn. So did that come? Did one come from the like? Did the Streamwood gig get you booked for the ECC gig?
So I did the Streamwood gig the first year, and then I got called to do it. It wasn't the following year because they didn't have a guitar part that year.
Uh-huh.
But the year after that, they called me again to do it for Little Shop of Horrors. And the keyboard player was also working the last one, and he probably did the one in before
right.
too.
Uh-huh.
I think he's like the same guy that's been doing it with the band director there and the music teacher, Zachary Geller. He's a cool guy. So he hit me up to do the ECC one because he's like, I only know like two people that play guitar in like pit orchestras, and the other person who I'm like, you know, I've befriended since then, Bob. And so he was like another like pit orchestra guitar player, and he was like into doom metal and like all the same stuff. And like, I've seen him at like doom concerts and stuff, like drinking
nice.
Beer and, you know, getting stoned with him and shit like that. So it was like super hilarious, but, and just like, you know, another way to like connect with people. And, yeah, we played at, like, the Blizzard Theater, and I got it through the Streamwood thing.
Nice.
He was just a keyboard player in the Streamwood one, but he was, like, the music director and for the ECC one.
Okay. So, and, yeah, so then there you go. And then people's connections from one thing can lead to another place, too.
Right. And we went on, like, the thing that went underneath the stage, you know?
Uh-huh.
That was pretty cool.
Oh, and does it rise up?
Yeah.
So, okay. That sounds... See, I've been on the ECC stage before, but doesn't the front of the stage, like, come out, too? Or is that what comes up?
That's what comes up.
Okay,
the front of the stage.
For sure.
Yeah, the front of the stage, like, goes down. And
yeah.
There's, like a thing that goes, like, underneath the stage.
Uh-huh.
For, like, the pit.
Okay.
So, like, it's not the director. I can't think of what the name is. The guy that does the...
The conductor?
Conductor, yeah. He is, like, standing with his back to the audience, but, like, kind of, like, in the back end of the part, so he can, like, see the stage, and then the band is, like, underneath the stage.
Okay. Damn, that's cool.
So he can see, like, both,
uh-huh.
both, like, going on, so, like, follow their cues and then, like, direct with what's happening.
Damn, so, like, literally underneath the stage.
Yeah.
That's wild.
Yeah, because, like, the front part of the stage, it goes down, but then, like, it goes, like, so you have the stage right here.
So and, it's, like hollowed out pretty much?
Yeah, so the front part, like, is, like, hollowed out right there.
Yeah. That's cool. Damn, I didn't even know that was the setup. I thought the chamber was literally just, like,
that part.
Lower ground, you know?
Yeah, yeah. And then you can access it through, like, another, like, from a staircase, too. You don't
mm-hmm.
have to take it that way.
Yeah.
Because, like, we just set our stuff there, and they just, like, took it down. And then we just walked down there for, like, the three nights or whatever we played.
Nice. Yeah, I played there when I was in the steel band with Steve Butters at ECC.
Okay.
So I was playing playing the tenor pan drums. That was fun, man. It was like we did medleys of a lot of Police songs. So it was like a string of Police songs, a Beatles song, an MGMT song. Nice. And they're all just like translated to steel drums.
I've been listening to a lot of MGMT lately.
Really?
Yeah, I don't know what sparked it. I just like, I don't know. That one album with
their first album?
Yeah, with the electric feel and
yeah,
everything.
Yeah, that one was classic. And then they kind of went a different route after that.
Yeah. And then they just kept going a different route after that.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah, they just kept, they kind of definitely went like way off the path. But that first album, yeah, was just like solid.
I read something, and I mean, I don't know how true it is. You could read it, anything. People could print whatever online. Yeah. But I just read something that they were, like, pretty into drugs and just, like, didn't give a shit, really, about, like, what people wanted from them. They just were, like, yeah, took drugs and, like, made whatever the fuck they wanted. So I don't know if that's true or not, but...
That's what I read, too.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I don't know. I don't know if that's true or not, but I think it is.
Yeah.
Because I'd seen some, like, live performance, and you could tell they were, like, tripping balls.
Yeah, dude, I saw them at Lollapalooza, actually, and I was pretty excited, and it just wasn't a very good performance. It was, like, it just seemed like they weren't really in it like that. The voice wasn't, his voice wasn't very strong, you know. Yeah. But I had seen them when they first, like, came out to the scene. I don't know how long they had been a band. I always assumed that, like, you know, we always say, like, oh, when they first came out. But that's usually probably a point when a band has, like, already been together for, like, 4 or 5 years in an underground scene. But right. I saw them at Bonnaroo Music Festival in Tennessee, and that was probably 2008. I went right when I graduated high school, so yeah. And dating ourselves here on our, like, perfect, so everyone could just, all right, you graduated this age. Yeah. You don't know how many, maybe I failed 36 times, so, but now I'm just but
was that a good concert, though? Was that a lot better?
I remember that being better at that point, you know? And that was, like, when that album first dropped. And yeah, they were, like, really buzzing, and they were like, man, it's crazy. At those times, it was still, like, blog sites, and, you know, it was just, like, a different hype machine than what it is now.
Definitely.
Yeah.
I saw Tame Impala at, like, a really small venue, too.
Really?
Yeah, they were not headlining anything. I mean, they were headlining their own show.
Right.
But it wasn't at, like, the Allstate Arena like it was the last time or whatever.
Yeah.
It's like the Riv or the Riviera or something. Super small venue.
Nice, dude. I saw Kendrick Lamar at the, what's the one? Not the one that's next to the where the Congress used to be. Concord.
The Concord, yeah. That one's not open anymore, is it?
Congress is closed. Concord Congress is still open, I believe.
Okay.
Unless it closed, like,
I'm not sure,
this past year.
Yeah.
But
I don't know.
Yeah. So that was actually when Kendrick Lamar was already big, but he just did like a small club tour.
That's dope.
So I saw him there. But then, like, earlier in his career, I had seen him at Congress, and I remember seeing it's awesome to see, like, artists blow up, and then they were doing, like, just a year or two before doing club shows. Like, I saw Schoolboy Q at Reggie's Rock Club, and then not too long ago, I saw Schoolboy Q at an amphitheater. You know what I mean? Like, so
that's super dope.
Yeah.
I don't think I've ever seen Tame Impala again after that. But I did see Ghost, that band that was at Open Air they were talking about earlier. Yeah. I saw Ghost, and they were called Ghost BC. And I think there was another band called Ghost BC, and they had to change their name.
Okay.
And they were playing at Lollapalooza at some, like, small stage, like, in the middle of the fucking day. Like, the sun just, like, beaming down on them, and they're, like, their suits, you know?
Yeah.
And he was the guy that was, I don't know if it's the same singer that they had, I'm not sure.
Uh-huh.
I don't follow them that much. But this was, like, when they were first started, like, coming out, and I was like, oh, I'll check them out and see how their live show is. And, like, they had, like, the cloaks and everything. Like, they didn't have, like, the metal masks that they did now, and kind of, like, the suits. It was, like, heavy cloaks, and, like, their faces are covered, and the guy is in, like, a full, like, priest outfit with, like, the priest hat on, and, like,
damn,
and like with like the robes and shit like that, with like the sun just like beaming down on them. It was fucking ridiculous. Dude,
dedication. That's why they got where they're at now.
Yeah,
going
they,
do shit like that.
And then they opened for Tool.
Right, there you go. They made it. They made it at that point. Dude, I saw Lollapalooza is like in Bonnaroo and shows like that are like, I mean, now I feel like most of those have gotten increasingly more like pop oriented over the years.
Yeah, definitely.
But I remember seeing Deadmau5. Perry's is like the EDM stage. Perry's has become a huge part of Lollapalooza at this point. But when it first started off, it was like a very small stage, like off in the trees. And EDM wasn't very big in like 2008, you know.
Right.
It was there. It was alive for sure, and like, but it was still more of like underground culture, you know.
Dubstep didn't quite make a splash yet.
It was like I think even probably it might have even been like pre Skrillex, you know. Like I'm not like huge in that scene, but I feel like Skrillex like blew the fuck up, and like then the scene like kind of blew up.
I think Skrillex was like after I graduated high school for sure.
So. Yeah, so it was probably around, like, yeah, a couple, like, I don't know. But so I walked by. I was going to see Jane's Addiction at Lollapalooza, and I never saw Jane's Addiction because I was just, like, drunk as hell and walked by Deadmau5 and heard this dance music and saw a fucking big mouse helmet and just, like, had the time of my life. I'm like, all right, I'll just sit and watch this for a little bit. And then, like, before I know it, I watched the whole set and, like, James Dixon's done, Deadmau5 is done, like Lollapalooza is over, like time to go. But it was like Deadmau5 with maybe no more than like a couple hundred people tops, you know, like you got James Addiction on one main stage and you had somebody else on another main stage, I don't remember who, and then you had I don't know if they still do it like this where they have, yeah, they do. Perry's has a headliner at that. They do have three headliners at once, I think. But yeah, so Deadmau5 must have been headlining Perry's. But like I said, Perry's at that time was like a pretty small area within Lollapalooza. So, but then yeah, then shortly after that, Deadmau5's production was huge and was like an arena show, you know?
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's pretty ridiculous.
Amy Winehouse was at one of the Lollapaloozas I was at.
Well, that would have been cool.
There's like, it's crazy, you go to those big festivals and like you might not know that you're seeing like one of the, what's going to be one of the biggest artists of the next however many years, you know.
Are you familiar with Beach Bunny?
Yeah,
it's crazy how big they're getting.
Yeah, dude, they were like playing at Side Street and then played Lollapalooza within what, like a year and a half, 2 years,
and they were just on Jimmy Kimmel.
Yep.
Like what?
Yeah, that's awesome, man. That's so awesome for them. They're fucking, they were at the, Beach Bunny didn't perform at it, but that show I was talking about where Angus's voice was resonating through the streets, Mel Pocono, they're not a band anymore, but they were playing at that show, and I don't know, definitely Jonathan, the drummer from Beach Bunny, he was in Mel Pocono. So, like, some of the members of Beach Bunny were chilling at that event, too. And at that time, I think it might have been the year after that Beach Bunny had done the Battle of the Bands at Side Street. So, yeah, just to see a band go from, like, playing at an art gallery in Elgin to,
did
like,
they win the Battle of the Bands?
I don't even think they won the battle. Yeah, so there you go. Even more, like,
I may have seen
success
them there,
story.
Too.
You know what I mean? Like, especially if they didn't even win, to go from like playing at the Battle of the Bands there in Elgin to playing at Lollapalooza within the span of like 2 years. That's a pretty big come up for any act, you know?
Yeah.
So that's awesome. I'm happy to see like people from our area just have success like that.
Yeah. Just curious how they work their way through that, you know? I don't get it.
Yeah, I think they just, people must connect with the songs like that to the point where it spreads, you know?
Yeah. I mean, no offense to them. Like, the music's done really well, but I don't feel like, I don't necessarily feel that way about the music. It's
to
like,
me, it's like there's genres that just don't resonate with me, period.
Yeah.
And like, you know,
that's kind of, I feel like they may be, yeah. So, you know, it's not going to be for everybody, but I get it in the standpoint of like the lyrics are very, vivid. Like you could,
yeah,
you could like listen to it and hear like, okay, like you could relate to that if you also go through those same emotions or have been in those scenarios, you know?
Right. Exactly. Yeah. You know, it's done really well. Like, she does a really good job, or the band does a really good job with, like, the music. Yeah, I don't connect with it, like, in that way. But they do a really good job. And, like, good for them that they're, like, crushing it right now. It sucks that, like, it's just during what's happening.
Yeah, so everything has to, like, dude, momentum for so many bands that are getting started like that. I think they have enough momentum that they're probably fine. Like, I don't think they're going to lose too much traction off of it.
No, I don't think so.
At least in this area, you know, but yeah, there's plenty of bands that are like on the come up, especially, dude, I feel bad for bands who had like South by Southwest showcases booked and things like that. And they had to just like, cause that was like when COVID first shut everything down when South by Southwest 2020 was about to happen and then they canceled it. So I'm sure a lot of those bands had like hotels and planes, like, yeah, you know, bands put a lot into those things, like,
right,
for anyone who doesn't know, like, a lot of artists are, even if they are getting paid for a showcase or something at South by Southwest, even some of the bands that are like really doing it and are like marquee acts there as far as the indies are still like barely get like maybe breaking even or making a little bit of money, because you have to pay your, like, if you're an international act or something, if you're coming from Canada or France to fucking Texas, so you got to book your flight, you got to book hotels, because it's still like an indie act based thing. So I don't know, I'm sure there's some acts that are getting all that shit taken care of, but a lot of them I think are still paying out of pocket, you know what I mean? So it's like, how many acts had to like not only lose the publicity they were going to get, but also lose investment in like merchandising that they bought to pass out at the events or whatever, you know what I mean?
They like, could have said South by Southwest 2020.
Right, or yeah, how many bands had tour shirts printed up, like 2020 tour?
Right.
Those are going to become like collectible items.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? If you got like a...
Nobody can say they were at that show.
Yeah, exactly. So if you have the like Lollapalooza 2020 tour shirt, like a legit licensed one, then it's like, oh shit, like that never came out, you know, and that never happened.
Right, that never happened.
Yeah, that would be a dope find, but I'm sure there's some out there. Like, I'm sure there was maybe not festivals and summer festivals because they had enough leeway to know, like, this is probably going to be canceled by that point. But whatever, bands that were going on spring tours that were getting ready to leave in March, in April, probably had like thousands of shirts printed up and posters printed up and shit.
That's fucking dreadful.
So yeah, hopefully for indie band, I mean, I don't think there's too many indie bands who are making like tour shirts with the dates on them and shit.
Yeah, they're just probably making shirts.
They're just making like their band, their regular logo shirts, maybe a few variances of them.
But still, the hotels and, you know, and who knows how lenient the hotels are being with refunds.
Even
and,
if you could get your money back, to have to, like, if you're booking an indie tour, that's a lot of work. And then to have to unbook an indie tour, like, all right, now you just booked however many cities to stay in, or bus tickets or flights or whatever you're doing. And then you got to cancel all those, try to get your money back on all those.
Yeah, like six hotels.
Haggle all these different hotels.
A rental car, two bus tickets, and like two plane tickets.
Right. Yeah, man, that's but it's hit a lot of fucking people, so it's like, it's not like indie artists are alone and getting like fucked over by the whole situation.
Yeah, everybody is.
Yeah, for the, not everybody. Some people are.
Yes, not everybody.
Some people are. Yeah, I mean, like, from a financial standpoint, I haven't really gotten hit too bad because I've been able to keep my job and shit, you know? Same. So, like, I have a job, so that's good. But yeah, there's definitely a lot of industries that are just, like, restaurants got slammed hard, bars got slammed hard, you know?
Yeah.
Seems like maybe they're recovering more now, but even yeah. to have to, like, I'm sure a lot of places are in a hole that they have to dig out of at this point.
Yeah, and then just, like, all the extra stress of just working in that environment, too.
Yeah,
and this
and exactly.
The, and with, like, with all of everything that's going on, you know, and,
yeah,
you know, I think things are getting a little bit better with, like, the vaccine. I think people are feeling more comfortable and safe and stuff, but... You know, even
still out there,
still out there, and like everything up to that point, they've been working through it. Like,
yeah. And then there's just like the mental aspect of having this has gone on for long enough at this point that the habits that we have and like the just the feelings about like interacting with each other,
yeah,
are in there now. So right. it's like we're gonna have to relearn how to like, all right, do we? Like when do we just for with a stranger that you meet shake their hand? You know what I mean? Like that's not still not really a thing at this point.
No.
It's like regardless of if the science says that, like the science says it's probably the droplets that are going to get people sick. It's not like a contact surface, whatever. That's still, but it's out there. So it's like, let's be safe. Right. So, but like, we're going to have to relearn all these things of, like, yeah. when is it an appropriate time to shake, especially for people who are, like, already on the, like, socially awkward side, to have to, like, relearn these habits that may have already been a chore to try to, like,
right.
do, you
yeah,
know what I mean?
Now they've been, like, yeah, taken out of the situation for over a year.
Yeah, like, everyone's had masks on, so that's, like, dude, and I didn't think about this until somebody brought it up to me the other day of, like, babies. You know, babies get most of their cues from faces, from just watching people's faces. So, like, all these babies that are being born are just missing that because everyone's got masks on.
There's
so
no
it's like,
smiling. There's no frowning. There's
yeah, you don't know what the fuck's going on with people.
Yeah.
Well, that's, like, that's got to be kind of weird for people coming up, like, little babies coming up right now.
Because yeah, I'm sure, like, you know, if a baby sees someone smile, then they're going to smile, and they say it's easier
yeah,
to smile
mirror,
than to frown, you
yeah,
know?
Yeah, you mirror what you're seeing. So, I mean, hopefully you got smiles going on at home when you're not masked up, you
right.
know, but... Yeah.
But still, just to see, like, the whole outside world, like, if you're interacting, you know, you're picking up the outside world with no facial recognition, basically. You're just seeing, like, beady eyeballs, like,
yeah.
looking at everything. I never thought about that either.
And, dude, imagine people reading lips. Like, I didn't think about this really until now either, but people read it. I mean, I had, and it's come in certain scenarios, but just on a day-to-day basis, like, what if people who are deaf and you rely on, if that's your main means of, like, communication.
Right, understanding, yeah.
I think most people who have that ailment are probably, like, using sign language also, but I can't say everyone is. I don't know enough people to say I could have a sample size on that either, but, like, yeah, that's got to be tough, you know, because,
yeah.
like, how do you communicate at that point? Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. That is really tough.
Yeah.
I hadn't thought about that at all.
Especially because, like, yeah, even if you know sign language, like, I don't know sign language.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So, like, before, if you know how to read lips, then we could still have a conversation because you could read my lips, right? But
right.
now it's like, oh, shit, you lose that.
Yeah.
So it's wild, man. So we're going to have to, like,
as, like, a society, relearn how to, like...
figure all this shit out again. It's gonna be... And then I feel like the rules are gonna be different now. Like,
yes.
some of the things are gonna stick, you know?
Right. Yeah, it's... That is crazy. Think about.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we're getting pretty far into this. Was there anything else you wanted to plug in here with what you got going on?
Not necessarily. Just, like... check my music out. Really, I love creating shit, and I love people checking it out. So, yeah, I just want to, like, have fun coming on and talking and,
hell yeah,
and shooting
definitely.
Shit. So I've had a good time. But, yeah, I guess I probably should do the promo thing too. So check out the music. You go to morewatchcity.com. It's M-O-O-R-E, watchcity.com. I've been, like I talked about earlier, trying to get new music out weekly, but I'm definitely doing, you know, monthly for sure. And I've really been, I got probably here in 2021, I'll have to look back, but I think I'm up to like 7 releases at this point. So been pretty consistent with it. So just follow on Spotify. The links are all there on morewatchcity.com or Apple Music if you dig the music. And do that for all the artists that you like, because you might not think too much of it if you follow or not, but the way that our algorithmic world works, the more you press the follow buttons and the hearts next to the songs and put them into your playlist and shit like that, the more that the Spotify computer say, oh, this is good and we should show this to the world. So that's how you could easily help the artists that you like get out there. So yeah, that's it. That's my promo. Tune into the music if you are interested, and I would appreciate it. And yeah, thanks for having me on here.
Yeah, we're definitely a slave to the algorithms.
It's crazy. It's like it could help you so much and it could hinder you. Like if you're on the right side of it, then it's going to show you to so many people that you would never have gotten shown to before. But if you can't crack it, then you're just like stuck. Yeah. You know, you might not even get to the people who want to see your shit.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. You're just like in a black hole.
Yeah. That's what's crazy to me. I mean, that's for another show, I guess. But just the fact that, like, even people who follow you, only a percentage of them see your
stuff.
Yeah,
exactly. Yeah, that is pretty crazy. So, yeah, definitely anyone listening, like, and subscribe and follow and like any post that people put out or comment on their posts and stuff, like, any of that, share it. It all adds up to, like, a little bit. Because, like you said, it's like sometimes you post something and, like, my girlfriend won't even see, like, a tapeworm transmission
right,
post,
exactly,
you know?
It just doesn't get there. So basically just don't take for granted that those little impressions online don't mean anything, because they actually do, like, add up to a significant change in artist career, like, if, I guess, career or just success, however you want to put it, you know? Like, that's an easy way to get artists that you like in front of more people.
Hell yeah.
Or businesses you like, whatever.
Yeah. Right, yeah, anything. Anything that you like, just get it out there.
Uh-huh.
All right, well, I appreciate you coming on. We'll be back on again sometime.
For sure.
Chicago, let's turn the fuck up. You ready? If you're having fun and ready to have some more fun, then that same hand I've been asking you to put up, put that same one up. And bounce, bounce, bounce. Come on, what you about? I'm about good, green, and living lavish. Eating salad, broccoli, and baby cabbage. Organic, you are now my most planet. Eating like a rabbit, fucking like a rabbit. Orgasm habit, staring like OJ. Okay, Spanish girl, ole. Spending like she's in the Cirque du Soleil. Smoke weed all day. I don't advocate it, I'm just saying how my day-to-day is over this playlist of instrumentals I got from one to know he's one of the greatest. Faded to James and Jaden. Hated by few, envy by many. Keep my enemies closer than where my friends be. Fuck a band or a family that won't make you feel as empty. These women try and tempt me, I don't like what they're attempting. I got a life beyond rap, I don't be on that. I need another comma added to the contract. What you about? Chi-town, hands up and bounce, bounce, bounce. What you about? What you about? What you about? Every day I wake up to the woman of my dreams. Kiss her on the cheek, then go and take a pee. Brush my teeth, take a shower, then eat. After that, it's different every day of the week. Sometimes I smoke, sometimes I don't. I'm about everything I write in these poems. I embody everything, I bite my own songs. Peace on earth, can we all get along? Or at least be tolerant instead of being ignorant. If you never try, no one's ever gonna give a shit. That's why I rock in every city like I live in it. Been a citizen for life, but I'm only visiting. Y'all don't hear you listening. Rap game, Billy Hoare, drive to the backboard, grind to my back sore. Hey, if you don't rap for a living, or rap about how you're living, what do you rap for? 1,000 YouTube views, one pop groupie? I'd rather be in juice and have Pac shoot me. That was just a movie. I'm just hustling for my daughter like I was big in the beginning of Juicy. What you about? Bounce, bounce, bounce. Come on, come on. What you about?
Let's hear it for Brandon on the saxophone and Kaz on the scratches.